YPG's desert rats tested weapons of war so they'd work when soldiers' lives depended on them. Thousands of veterans walk the earth today thanks to their work. After decades of service, all that's left is testament. Desert Rat Testament is a monthly anthology that collects the stories and recollections of retired UMA Proving Ground employees of decades-long service. Hello, I'm Mark Schauer. Born in Pittsburgh and raised in California, Army Captain Gary Magrino was supply officer at UMA Proving Ground from 1982 to 1985. He and his wife liked UMA so much, he ended his Army career early to stay in town and became prominent in the local business community.
Were you at Oakland Army Base when you first got orders to UMA Proving Ground?
No, I was in Germany. I was at Rhein-Main Air Base, ran the truck company there at Rhein-Main for the 37th Group. I went from Oakland to the advanced course to Germany.
Had you heard of UMA Proving Ground before you got orders to go there?
Interesting thing that I did find, when I was at the Oakland Army Base, I was reviewing a property disposal sale, and they had a 1970 International Scout 300A for sale on property disposal. So I put a bid in it on it, and it was here in Yuma, and I got it. So I had to come down to Yuma to pick it up and take it where I was going to go, which was Santa Maria, was my home. And, you know, I didn't jazz it up at all, but it was strictly came right off the range, you know, the old 1970 series 800As. So I did come down here. I thought, what a nice place. You know, it was in the middle of the winter, so it wasn't hot. And then I went over to Europe. And so when I'm coming out of Europe, they said to me, you know, they said, have you ever been to Yuma? And I said, oh, yeah, I'd go there. He said they had a boat dock down there, so I had to have water near it, which was, you know, the Colorado. And next thing you know, I'm on orders coming to Yuma. Got here in May of 82, and it was like 110 degrees. And the wife looked at me and said, what kind of a hellhole is this?
What was the culture like at Yuma Proving Ground compared to where you had served before?
It was ridiculously laid back. I got here, I came out of 37th Group, Reforger, Folder Gap, and I get here, and I got onto the motor pool, and all of our vehicles are painted, all different types of olive drab. I said, does anybody have a manual here on what the painting, you know, the specs are? And they couldn't find one, so we had to order the right manual and figure out the paint. I said, this is embarrassing. I'm a transportation corps officer. I said, this is embarrassing the way you guys have this equipment around here. Of course, those guys were engineers and scientists, and they didn't care about anything like that. You know, we were doing some probably the best things in the Army to that point. We had the M1 going on. We had the Humvee working, finishing that one up. The Germans were here with the Canadians, and they were working on drones. We had the GPS going on. And all this was going on. I was a supply officer, and I had a little Rampage. I had this little Dodge Rampages, and I drove all over the place and got to see everything going on. I forgot the Apache was out there, too. You know, that helicopter was amazing.
So what were your typical duties as supply officer for a developmental test post like Yuma Proving Ground?
Well, I was in charge of all the basic load stuff. We have the self-service store. I did help MTD. I ordered a drum of diesel fuel that would not freeze or wouldn't cloud up until 60 below zero. Most diesel fuel, you get it about 30, it starts clouding up and it won't flow through the filters. But this stuff was special. And I remember the engineer in charge of that. He said, there's a drum of it in Fairbanks, Alaska. Can you get it down here? Said, well, that'd be fun to try. And I did. We got it down here. And they put it in the M1 tank. They put the tank in it's a big warehouse, some climate type thing. And they would lower the temperature of that whole room below zero. and see if the M1 could fire its gun and it would work. And then the other thing we did, I did arrange for our unit, arranged for movement of the guns would come in, or the heavy equipment would come in the Blaisdell siding, and would have to get Jerry Thomas or some heavy hauler guy to take it up to YPG, because we had no way, we had no rail going into YPG.
Did you and your wife live on posts when you were here?
Yes. Yeah. Quarters 805. And we were on the left. It's gone now, but it was one of those precast concrete houses. When you'd water the lawn, the water would actually come through the walls. The walls were about a foot so thick, just precast concrete. It was an experimental home, and they were all built like that.
What was your post life like?
We had a good, we had a bowling alley. I think you still might have it. I don't know. We enjoyed that. A lot of us had leagues going for bowling. We had the swimming pool going. And on weekends, we most of us had little ski boats, and we'd go out to Center's Wash and would put the boat in at Center's Wash and barbecue and picnic all weekend. And that was fun. That was probably, I came out of a very stressful thing at the 37th Group in Europe. It was, there's no fooling around over there, and get down here. It was like Hawaii, you know, there's, you know, not a big thing.
You and your wife loved the Yuma lifestyle so much you decided to leave the Army and stay here.
Yeah, yeah. She was a, I was a general's aide at Oakland, and she was beginning her career as a stockbroker, and she was in the Bank of America building. So we got down here, she got a job with Merrill Lynch and ran her office down here. And she would commute from YPG in, and then she'd come home, and we had a horse, which she kept down there, and then she'd drive back down to feed the horse. I mean, I must have put on 100 miles a day on my vehicle, just her driving back and forth. But we did like it. I've never had an easier IG than I did a YPG, because those guys were all of them. The lowest one was the retired E-7 Marine, you know, so you couldn't fool them. They knew how to do everything. Those were good times. It was a good place that had very, very intelligent people. I mean, they were all good. All the, you know, the hack-a-macks, and always were thinking out of the box. They were always calculating how they could get more test dollars. And I'm just here trying to see, you know, what do you need?
When you left the Army, you founded your own refrigerated transportation company. How did that come about?
Well, I came out on July 4th of, July 3rd, I believe, 1985. And it was surreal. I walk out on the parade field at YPG and all the sprinklers are going. I was probably 110. And a young lieutenant, she said, well, thank you for your service, normal stuff. And I felt, is this really the right thing to do? And, you know, that's quite I had no job. Luckily, my wife was making good money. So I came down here to Yuma and didn't know anybody. I'm just bouncing around. And then one of the past commanders from the Marine base, he knew me and knew of me. And he said, Gary, I've got a friend and we want you to buy his business. Well, he had the Ryder truck rental franchise on Gila Ridge and a laundromat that went with it. I told him, I said, hey, I just got out of the Army. I have genteel poverty. We don't have anything. We have just enough to get by, but nothing, you know, to buy anything. And he said, no, don't worry. They're going to finance it for you. And that's where it started. And from that, I expanded that into the trucking company. We hauled fertilizer for Glenn Curtis and a bunch of the farmers, and fruit for Sunkist. And I got into the refrigerating, and then the cattle. And then that's how we did it.
Now, along the way, you started serving on the board of the Greater Yuma Port Authority, too.
I actually founded that thing. My first duty statement assignment was, remember MTMTS, MITMIC? They sent me to the PNW outport in Seattle. And as a second lieutenant, I had a little pickup truck, and I'd drive from Coos Bay, Oregon, all the way up to the Canadian border. And I'd inspect government shipments to make sure that they were actually on board and, you know, sign the manifests and do whatever I needed to do. And I got to see how they did an inland port when I got down here to Yuma, and we were doing pretty well in my business. I was chairman of the Chamber of Commerce. After that, I said, you know what? We're a logistic hub. This Yuma was here because of logistics. Why don't we put in a real logistic hub? And I worked, got the right people together, went to D.C. many times, and put in the GYPA, Greater Yuma Port Authority. That in itself is a history-making deal that, you know, that's where we are today. But they named it after me. Casey Prohaska said, hey, we're going to name the not the fort, but name the marketplace or the warehousing area, logistics center for me.
Eventually, you sold your business, and these days, you're in economic development for the Kokopah.
Right. I sold my business. I got tired one day and said, that's enough. So I sold all the pieces, and I decided I was going to stay home. But after 6 months, Mark, I couldn't mow the lawn anymore. It was just killing me. I need the thrill of the game, you know, the fun, the get in, the meeting people, getting to know, hearing new ideas. That's when the Kokopah said, hey, come on down here and see what you can do here. So I've been here 10 years now.
No, you've achieved a lot as a civilian in Yuma.
You know, I figured if you're good in the military, you can make it anywhere. And so when I got here and got the Port Authority going, and they said, well, how do you know all this? And so I learned it in the Army. That's how I learned it. You know, I learned how to load ships, how to do rail. And as luck would have it, the GSA wanted to build a new port. They didn't want to put all the money in San Luis One. They wanted to build a new port in San Luis Two. And I said, well, here we are. We'll help you do it.
Just recently, the Army celebrated its 250th birthday, and Yuma had a very special celebration, and you were part of it.
I really like the Army. My friends are—they're dying off now. But I had—I was an aide for four or five logistics guys, generals, and one of them, General Ross, he actually was the. He became the director of the U.S. blood supply for the American Red Cross. He called me one day and said, I want you to come up as a reservist and work at the Pentagon. So I did. It's called an IMA, Individual Mobilization Augmentee. That was like 4 years, I think, I was in the reserves up there. And that was probably the neatest stuff. We invaded Panama. I got recalled for Desert Storm, Desert Shield, all that business. It was truly amazing to see how the country ran that way. And then I think the Army is part of me. My good friends, I've been back to Arlington twice to see friends be buried, full military. I have other friends come by, and I have one buddy, I call him, he does the obituaries. Every time I get an email from him, somebody dies. I said, you're killing me here. Oh, the Army... It's me. I mean, I get a lot of people say, why don't you join the Marines? Why don't you join the Air Force? Well, you know, my dad said when I went home from college the first day, and I told him, I said, I signed up for Army ROTC. He said, well, why didn't you get the Navy? Because he was Navy. I said, no. I said, they didn't have the Navy. I don't want to fool around. I'm going in the Army. I said, because they have the most opportunity. And they've got a spray that I like.
Hey, Gary, it's really good talking with you today.
Oh, my pleasure.
For as long as the United States has a military, Yuma Proving Ground will be vital to the national defense. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on The Testament.